Discussion keeps the world turning.
This is Roundtable.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Roundtable. Coming to you from Beijing, I'm He Young. Good to have you for this ride. On today's show, is retirement planning a sprint or a marathon? Starting young means saving smart, but delay too long and you might be working for your savings instead of the other way around. At what age and how much of our monthly income should we squirrel away? Is it doable? And we take a deep dive in what's called emotional value. It's the ache for emotional enrichment, a wish to be authentically recognized, heard, and empathized with. Could it be that in our personal bonds, professional paths, and consumer habits, we're all chasing after the elusive emotional value? For today's program, I'm joined by Xing Yu in the studio and Josh Cotterell on the line. First on today's show. As the population ages, the retirement age might be extended, placing greater strain on the adequacy of basic pension insurance replenishment. A scholar from the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences recommends that young people start saving for their retirement early and diversify their sources of income after they retire. Financial advisors often say that retirement savings is a young person's game. The earlier you start, the less you sacrifice. Wait until 50 and you'll need to save half of your salary. Start at 25 and just a tenth will do. So let's take a look at what the scholar is saying and how dire a situation are we looking at?
Yeah. So this professor we're talking about today is Zheng Bingwen at the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences. And he recently received an interview about old age insurance system in China. And he suggests that young people should get prepared for their retirement as early as possible. And he also says that a diversified source of income after retirement can be very beneficial for these young folks. One of the main reasons he put forward is due to the deepening of an aging society. He said that the income replacement rate in China is decreasing over the years. So this replacement rate refers to the percentage of a worker's pre-retirement income that is paid out by a pension program after the worker retires. So as World Bank suggests, you'll need probably 70% of your annual pre-retirement income to live comfortably when you retire. That would be enough if you've paid off your mortgage and you are in excellent health when you retire. But in China, Professor Zheng suggests that the pension replacement rate of Chinese employees is approximately 40% now. And that figure was around 50% 15 years ago. So that's why we're seeing more young people there placing more emphasis on investing more on their sunset years.
And also another rate is the elderly care rate. That is the ratio of retirees to in-service pension insurance contributors, and this is increasing year by year. Whereas, Xing Yu, you mentioned the basic pension replacement rate is decreasing year by year. And then, you know, coupling these two is kind of dire straits, really, I think, begs the question and, well, needs our attention to look at this particular issue. And Josh, I wonder, in the UK and other countries that you've done research on, is there a similar kind of worry or discussion over the prospective retirement situation for, let's say, the younger generation?
Yeah, definitely. I think that is definitely an emphasis on diversifying income sources for pensions. And so in this regard, there definitely is an increasing focus on this, on younger people investing in it, on investment in general, on the possibilities of investment and growing money. In the United Kingdom, there's been quite a lot of pension reforms in recent years that encourage younger generations, actually just individuals, any individual, but of course, people thinking about their pension at the beginning are usually the younger generation, right? Because if it's an older generation, they're probably already retired. So in the UK, there's a bit more of a push for a more proactive approach. There's things like auto-enrollment in a lot of workplaces, things like this. And also in the US, I found that There's some studies that show that some Americans aren't very well prepared. So there's also some auto-enrollment programs. There's a bit of an emphasis on greater responsibility with things like this. But I think that the biggest changes that I've seen is the auto-enrollment. In other countries like Australia and Canada, there's also been an implementation of policies, things like a combination of mandatory and voluntary saving schemes, also tax incentives as well, and stuff like this. So it's a bit of a mixed bag, and it's quite difficult to pinpoint exactly what's going on. But there does seem to be a greater emphasis on this issue, and people are thinking about it. And there's definitely a generational differences, though, when we talk about these things. I think that when it comes to Generation X, who are sort of sandwiched, they're sort of sandwiched between baby boomers, and millennials. They seem to have a bit more of a proactive approach in my country, and also in Western countries, like embracing sort of diverse income sources. Whereas millennials, and I know that this always sounds like a bit of a common gripe, but because I am one, but it seems that they're facing more economic challenges such as student debt. This wasn't as such a big thing before, housing affordability. And so there's more of a push to prioritize financial flexibility, things like freelance work, investment into stocks and shares, side businesses, etc., and pensions, of course.
Yeah, it sounds like for the younger generation, and here I mean millennials and Gen Z, so those born in the 1980s, 1990s, and even spilling over to the early 2000s, it's not like young people don't want to save up for their futures, but balancing priorities have proved challenging during a very different economic time now as opposed to years ago. So I think in a way, some of the young people, if you count the millennials in as well, might feel a little bit tired of being lectured on this every couple of years. There's similar issues that are brought up, and I don't think it's news that there's a shortfall in the pension fund in many countries around the world, and China is not immune to a lot of these, bigger factors of our times. And I suppose it deserves our attention to get into the nitty-gritty and the factors that contribute to today's situation. So, yeah. Xinyu, give us the bigger picture of the aging population and demographics, and also, you know, just what the figures show about how we got to this point.
Yeah, definitely China is faced with this aging population. According to the data from the National Bureau of Statistics, by the end of 2023, people aged 60 and above accounted for over 21% of the total population. And that figure was 18% by the end of 2019. And apart from this aging population, we have also seen the decline of fertility rates. From 2016, all couples are allowed to have a second child in the country, and also since 2021, couples can have a third child. But despite the policy change, the number of births still declined over the years. So in 2023, only 9 million were born. That number was down by 8 million in 2016. So the declining fertility rates and also the increased life expectancies over the last few decades have made China one of the more rapidly aging societies in the world. And like what I mentioned before, the low replacement rate of the basic pension insurance in the country has also raised some concerns, I think, across the country. So that's why China has launched this new private pension scheme in 2022, in November. So that can play a supplementary role in supporting the retirement phase of the citizens. Mm-hmm. So I'll just elaborate a bit more about this private pension scheme in China. So basically, in China now, we have three pillars of the pension system, including the national public pension, enterprise annuities, and also this newly launched private pension. So I think for these previous generations, many of them relied entirely on public pensions to fund their retirement. But the country is offering tax incentives to encourage more citizens covered by the public pension scheme to contribute a yearly fund toward a retirement account. And since the launch in 2022, so far we have 50 million Chinese have opened personal pension accounts by the end of 2023. But the thing is, only 22% of them have contributed to their account. So we are seeing the phenomenon that though many young people have opened their accounts, but still a small portion of them, they actually contributed to the account. Mm-hmm. So that's a situation we're facing right now.
Yeah, and with each personal pension account, one can deposit 12,000 yuan per year. Mm-hmm. And that's the upper limit. And this is also eligible for tax relief. So yeah, offering incentive for people to join in, but putting aside this amount of money into your personal pension account is still something that needs more persuasion for people to join in. And I think the obvious question that people have been pondering over is that would this deliver an adequate result after retirement? And because we're talking about decades in the future and there are some unknowns, and therefore I can understand why some people are a bit more hesitant to actually put away money every month to join this. Josh, do you see similar kind of qualms for young people when, let's say, you're only in your 20s or your 30s and planning ahead this far ahead for retirement when, yeah, we're talking about maybe every month you need to sort of shift your savings priorities a little bit towards this? Is this something that is easy to get people on board, or is it even doable for young folks that you know in your country?
Well, I think that in some ways it is becoming easier. I think one of the reasons for this is because of the technological revolution and how easy it is now for younger generations, especially millennials, digital natives and such, to embrace technological solutions for managing finance, and not only to manage finance, but also to invest very easily. You'd have to have minimal or zero expertise in trading or finance really to get involved with, for example, investment in stocks or shares or something like this. And a retirement fund, although it is different in some ways, it's still an investment. And there are many different types of retirement funds, right? And I think that it can often seem quite approachable previously and quite complex, but I think that technology makes it pretty easier. So I would say that this is one reason.
Yeah, Josh, let me ask you a question here. I agree that the method of getting into investment and savings and making these financial decisions seem to be easier. But the point here is that you don't want to lose money and you want your money to grow. And if we're talking about retirement, I think some folks maybe yielding a huge investment isn't really what they're looking for, but they want safety of this money because this is the nestle egg that you've put away and you need it when one day you're living on a fixed pension. Can you still call it an income after one's retirement? So I think the safety and stability is really the top concern when we're talking about these kind of financial decisions. And I don't think young people know all that much more, or maybe, you know, feel free to disagree with me, that are today's young people a little bit more financially savvy when it comes to being in better economic health? So my point here is really, yes, getting into the game is easy thanks to technology and technological advancement, but are people equipped with the necessary knowledge in making the right or the better financial decisions suitable for one's situation is my question.
Yeah, sure. Well, I think that young people aren't less savvy at all when it comes to finance. I think that they're just in a much worse position than previous generations when it comes to things like the number one thing is housing affordability. It sounds like a broken record to keep coming back about it, but many young individuals across the world, especially in I can say for sure in my own country and most Western countries, really struggle with housing affordability. I don't think this can be equated to, you know, a lack of understanding when it comes to their finances or a lack of interest in it. Student debt as well. Keep going on about it, but millennials and Gen Z often face substantial student loan debt to a point where they could never even pay it off. It's so high, right? This just wasn't the case before. And I think that probably because of this, they're even more savvy about things like student debt and finances because they have to be in order to cope with it. So I think that this is probably the biggest factor here. And, you know, it's quite difficult to compare generational differences and differences of how savvy or not these generations are. But that's my initial thought about that issue anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Having a place to live, having a roof over your head that you can call your own property, I think that's what a lot of people aspire to. And in China, I think housing affordability is something that people have been talking about for years as well, especially with our migrant population, in the sense that a lot more Chinese people are moving away from their ancestral hometowns or whatnot into big cities or into a different city. And putting down roots often means that you would like to buy property there. And this is one of the biggest financial decisions for a lot of people. And of course, being able to finance that is closely connected to how people feel about their future and about their well-being. And I think in that sense, I guess we're facing similar qualms in a way, but how to deal with it might be a bit different. And it's common for young people to feel like, I want to wait for a point when it feels right to start saving, when you're earning more, when your life is a little bit more stable. But actually, a lot of financial advisors say the earlier you start, the better. And that's the smart decision. But I also understand that it's just really hard to do for maybe in a way a lot of young people, because you're just joining the workforce and you're starting at the entry salary level, and to put away money every month. Also, you know, as you grow a little bit older, you might be talking about getting married or build a life or start saving up for your down payment for that, you know, prospective property that you're hoping to own one day. And all these things seem to kind of come in conflict with saving up for retirement.
Yeah. I think for young Chinese, we have this perception that these young people, they live from paycheck to paycheck, especially for those young guys who have just started their jobs. But nowadays on social media, these young folks have started a new trend of saving up. We have seen topics about saving money quite trending on social media platforms like Weibo. There's a hashtag which says a youngster with a monthly salary of 10,000 yuan, so that's around $1,400, has saved 100,000 yuan in a year. And this has triggered heated discussions online about financial management. So many netizens were very curious about how this person has actually able to save such big sum of money. And this guy says he doesn't really have any kind of entertainment and he doesn't buy anything that he doesn't need. So I think that's one of the ways how he has saved that much of money. And also what's interesting is that on Douban, this platform actually is a movie rating platform, but there is a group called Crazy Saving Money, and there are over 600,000 young people they have gathered in this group, and they're calling themselves Money Saving Jars. And they would share some of their experiences of saving money on this platform every day and motivate other group members to save money and join the group. So there's also an interesting term called 无痛攒钱, so literally
painless.
Painless saving up. So it's basically about about you save up a bit of money every day or every month that doesn't affect your lifestyle or quality of life. And then over time, you can actually see a huge, probably huge sum of money out of it. And we have also previously talked about some people using cash instead of digital payment to save up some money. So I think there are multiple ways. It shows that more young people, they focus more on this long-term and secure financial management methods, and they seek probably steady progress and to accumulate wealth.
Yeah, and internationally I've seen, and also we've discussed this on the show a few years ago, called the FIRE movement. FIRE is an acronym to financial independence, retire early. But the action is actually a lot less glamorous than the gospel. Basically, these folks live similarly to the guy Xingyu you just mentioned. I'm just cutting out all the unnecessary expenses and only live by necessity. And well, you know, to each their own. It's probably not for everyone, but for those who are committed, it's possible to put together a handsome amount of money in some time. And Josh, do you buy this idea of persuading young people to save up as young as possible? And also, if there are tips and tricks in doing so that could be a little bit more on the painless side?
No, I don't buy into it. I think it's quite patronizing, really. And I think that, to be honest, the main reason the issues here and what should be fixed are much deeper rooted than just saving money or, you know, all these little tips and tricks are great. And, you know, we have to be careful with our money. But why younger generations are supposed to be even more careful with money than previous generations, that shows that there's a deeper issue at work here. There needs to be more affordable housing policies. There needs to be, you know, things like it incentivizing affordable housing units or providing down payments or assistance for first-time buyers, depending on their financial situation. Also, I think there needs to be, I think education is a huge thing, and there needs to be more affordable education and student loan relief for those who need it. I think that grants and scholarships, tuition subsidies and such need to be provided to those students who deserve them. And, you know, I'm not sure who does exactly. That's another discussion, but that needs to happen. And there needs to, if so many students can't afford to pay back their debt, then that's an issue, right? It should be paybackable, right? It should be able to be paid back. And if it's not, then that's a problem, right? It's a very obvious issue. That's what's going on in my own country. Most people of my generation will not pay back their student loan. And that is very obvious to me economically as a layman that there's a problem with that system. This needs to be addressed. And yeah, on an individual basis, there are certainly things we can do. You do need to start investing in your pension early. I think you need to do that. I think you need to diversify, you know, your income and your investments as well. Sure. But I think the problem is much more deep rooted personally. And you can tell I have a bit of a personal vendetta with this because I'm of that generation. And you know, student debt as well has been an issue for me and everybody I know. So I will try not to go on about that too much and keep it relevant.
I appreciate it, Josh, to have your different perspective on this issue. And also, when we're talking about tens of thousands of pounds of student debt when a young person enters society, and that is definitely extra financial strain. I can only say I empathize and sympathize to a certain extent, and that's definitely a pretty tough financial situation to be in. But also, at the end of the day, one could ask about these bigger factors or deeper rooted problems or issues in society that culminate to this, but also encountering everyone's own situation, then making your own financially sound decision is really important. And that could start with having some healthy financial habits of budgeting, of utilizing compound rates, and also, you know, just don't take on unnecessary debt unless you absolutely have to. And let's try to not put ourselves in that situation. Possibly these are some thoughts.